小暖。
我们的民主之所以现在正在走向某种程度的灭亡，是因为随着新科技的发展，我们并没有和民主一起演进，而我们的民主也并没有进行到更新。在传统的过去的管辖范围里面，我们并没有把这个新的科技发展的内容囊括进到我们民主的范畴里面。这其实并不是一个很激进的说法。在美国华盛顿特区的 Jefferson Memorial， 它上面就写到说，每30年宪法其实就必须要更新一次。那如果没有更新的话，会导致民主的败坏。而非常有名的这个，或他有可能是台湾里面最重要的政治哲学家约翰杜威，他也特别讲到，民主是一个需要被不断更新的事情，但我们在过去的这段时间却忘记了这件事情。
科技、创新、娱乐，各种新奇有趣，都在宝博朋友说。嘿、hey, ，你听宝博朋友说了吗 ？Hello， 欢迎来到宝博朋友说，我是葛如君宝博士。哇，今天又是圆梦的一集啊哈！现在坐在我面前呢，就是以市场机制促进公共利益哈，号称21世纪最深刻的民主经济思考的一本书《激进市场》的作者 Glenn White 哈，非常开心他首次的莅临台湾，就接受我们的邀请，来到宝博朋友说的节目当中，要来聊聊他对民主的见解与分析。当然，这也是久违的双语访问啦，谢谢我们的好朋友 Vivian 担任这一次的翻译，马上就来欢迎。欢迎今天的大来宾 Glenn Wild。
I'm so delighted to be here. Hi to everyone. This actually is my second visit to Taiwan. I was here 13 years ago on my honeymoon, and I've already had my first shijia, which is my favorite fruit in the world. You can't get in many places other than here. So, and it was delicious. So great to be here.
这是我第二次来到台湾，上一次其实是好几十年前到这边来度蜜月，然后那时候就试过释迦这个水果，然后就爱不释手。
那我先简短的介绍一下哈 ，Glenn White 哈，微软研究院的首席研究员哈，耶鲁大学法学院与经济学系资深访问研究员哈，曾经担任芝加哥大学经济学系的助理教授 Sloan 哈，这个史隆商学院的研究员，秉持着各种精神呢，这个多管齐下哈，去追求很多理论跟实务上的一些构想，写了非常多的论文，然后做很多的公众著述哈，从政策制定者的交流到创业，然后实践研究，那以及创建了这个所谓的 radical exchange 的一个 movement， 那现在呢也进化变成了是 plurality 的一个 institute。那他写的一本很我自己都觉得非常棒的书，然后也在节目当中介绍了非常多次，叫做《激进市场》，那全名叫做《激进市场：战胜不平等、经济停滞与政治动荡的全新市场设计》哈。那接下来他也正在撰写一本书啊，跟唐凤 Audrey 以及这个 Plurality Community 啊，就是这个多元宇宙的社群正在合著的一本书《多元宇宙协作技术与民主的未来》，也即将要推出。Yeah， so 有没有什么是你觉得这个还想要多让大家认识你一点点？除了学者啊，然后除了 honeymoon 来台湾，还有没有什么呢？比如说你这一次来到台湾的一个想法？
Well, when I came to Taiwan 13 years ago, I came mostly because I was invited by the Academia Sinica, and it was a way to pay for the rest of my honeymoon in Cambodia and Thailand.But in the end, Taiwan was our favorite place that we went to. It was an amazing place then. It's become an even more amazing place since then. I'm really delighted to be here. I think in so many ways, Taiwan is the most successful society in the world and a model for the rest of the world. And I'm here to see the world's most successful democracy in action for this election and to see how we can build on that success to constantly...up the game and set a model for the rest of the world as 70% of the people in democracies around the world will vote this year. We have to bring the stories of what Taiwan has achieved around the world. So thanks for being my teacher and for having me here. And let's see what together we can do to advance the future of working together democratically.
13年前我来到亚洲的时候，其实是要去柬埔寨跟泰国度蜜月，然后那时候呢，中研院刚刚好给我一个 offer， 是来到台湾这边做讲座，然后就可以帮我的这个度蜜月的旅费也一起 cover 掉。结果那一次旅程之中，我发现其实我最喜欢的其实是台湾。台湾是一个非常成功的社会，在某种程度上几乎是最成功的社会，它很大的幅度其实是非常成功的一个民主社会。那这一次呢，来到台湾这边可以观察到这个成功的民主社会怎么样进行一个大选。那同时我们也很希望可以透过观察这样子的模范，来看看未来怎么样让全世界的民主社会跟着一起提升。今年这世界上70%的民主国家民主政体都要进行投票，那这次来到台湾，我们要怎么把台湾的故事带到世界上面去，那跟着台湾学习，让其他人也一起接近台湾，也把这样子的东西当作是奠基我们未来民主经济发展的重要基石。
其实就像 Glenn Well 所说的，其实我们现在录音的时间是2024年的1月8号。那当然这个我们距离选举时间不算太长了。刚刚 Vivian 就问我说会不会对台湾选举结果很紧张。我觉得当然啦，很 exciting， 但是也很 exciting 可以跟 Glenn Well 在这么重要的时刻彼此也来聊一聊这个对全世界的民主来说最重要的一年。那2024年呢，就像 Glenn Well 所说，全世界有40多个国家将举行70场选举，全世界有一半以上的人口都会受到这个选举年的影响，可以说是历史上最大规模的。那地缘政治的动态或者是各个国家的状态都会改变，包括非洲有15个国家，美洲有9个国家，亚洲11个国家，欧洲20个国家，大洋洲有4个国家，以及欧盟和联合国的安理会可能都会有选举。当然还有我们这个我录音的时间几天之后的1月13号的台湾，当然播出的时间呢已经选完了，大家不知道觉得怎么样呢，以及11月即将来临的，我如果没记错的话，是美国的总统大选。我们的民主到底面临了什么样的问题，有什么样的一个机会，这也是我们希望在这一集能够简短的跟 Glenn Well 聊聊的地方。
Yeah, so the first thing to notice is thatYeah, there's this coincidence. Some countries have 3-year election cycles, some have 7 years, some have 4-year. Somehow they all line up on this year. So this is the year of democracy. But it's also the year of generative AI, which happened last year. And now it's all maturing. So we're going to see what consequences that has. For good and for ill, it's a danger, and many have talked about this. Misinformation, attacking voter rolls, impersonating people, et cetera. And it's a huge opportunity because we've seen in Taiwan all the ways in which digital tools can help diffuse those social problems, can help people reach consensus, can help people reach to better facts, to vote in different ways. So all of these possibilities are live this year.And every country has challenges, but more importantly, every country has the chance to realize that democracy is much more like technology than it is like a tired debate. There are so many areas to advance. Taiwan is ahead of the world in so many practices, and in some places it's behind the world, and in some places the world has many more things to do that it hasn't done.And I hope that Taiwan can continue along every dimension, not to rest on its laurels, but to continue to set a better and better example. You know, Microsoft didn't make Office and then declare victory. It had to make Internet Explorer. It had to make the cloud and generative AI. And I hope that we can iterate as fast and improve as much on democratic institutions as you know, the technology industry has on computers, and that Taiwan can make this a leading export industry. It's already perhaps the leading export industry for computers, and the next great export industry is democratic innovation.
今年是很特别的一年，它其实是个民主之年。 有一个很大的巧合是每个不同的国家民主政体它都有不一样的选举周期，三年四年七年等等的，但是刚好这些数字都在今年碰上了。那今年呢，除了是民主之年之外，也是生成式的人工智慧之年，从去年开始慢慢发展出来的。生成式人工智慧为我们社会带来挺多的危险，那这些危险包含不实资讯或者是人的资料被不当的运用，但它同时也为我们带来不一样的机会。而这个机会呢，它在于我们发现科技的工具其实可以帮我们去处理这些问题。那这些科技工具可以处理的问题包含做资讯的查核，不管是投票系或者是到那个投票系统 的更新，或者是让大家可以有更好的系统。所有的民主政体他们现在都站在一个危机和机会的临界点，大家都有机会，而台湾走在非常的前面，是可以引领大家往这个方向 去往前进的。台湾现在已经是电脑的主要的出口国，那我们是不是未来可以成为一个民主科技工具的主要出口国，让大家以我们为榜样？
Yeah, 就是未来我们可能不只能输出我们的 IC 晶片科技产品，我们也希望能够输出我们的民主的解决方案了。这段时间其实就像 Glenn Weil 所说的 Generative AI， 然后很多的这个 Crypto Web3、甚至接下来还有 Robotics， 一直让我想到1960年代60s、那个时候我们有 Sputnik、这个有卫星、有人类登陆月球，有电晶体的这个成长，跟这个网络的这个 Internet， the first Internet 的一个连接。从这个角度来看，我们好像又回到了一次爆炸性成长的一个过程，去了解过去也许可以帮助我们理解未来。所以我们也想知道一下民主的过去，就是说在过去的这段时间，在你的书里面好像有提到一些在美国的民主可能有些好的例子，可能有些不好的例子，甚至是选举的方法其实有点失灵，或者可能会造成大家投出来的人并不是接受度最高的。能不能跟我们分享一些在民主这个角度，或者是投票的制度，在美国有没有一些什么例子可以跟我们分享的？
I think that part of the problem we faceare the new disruptions of particular tools or the ways in which things are organized. But there's something more basic that's going on, which is that technologies reshape the way that we interact with each other. When the radio comes in, people who never talk to each other are talking to each other. When the railroad comes in, people who were not connected to each other are connected to each other.So the ways in which we are interdependent evolve with the technology. And what democracy means is actually that the things that link us together, we govern them together. And so it's simply impossible. Democracy always will be dying as long as technology advances, because...Only if we hold the ways in which we're interdependent with each other fixed, can any fixed democratic institution be democratic. No one would say that a country where 5% of people have the vote and everyone else is disenfranchised is democratic. And yet, because of the ways that technology creates new interdependencies across countries, within countries, and those don't,line up with the jurisdictions that we've historically set down, it's natural, it's inevitable that democracy will die. So if democracy is to live, we constantly have to reinvent it. Yes. We constantly have to find the new places where it goes. And that idea is not some radical innovation of mine. If you go to the Jefferson Memorial,in Washington, D.C., there's a line inscribed on the wall where Jefferson said that the Constitution must be rewritten every 30 years. And if not, it's the same as if a Man Wears the Coat That Was Made for Him as a Boy. And John Dewey, the most important American political philosopher and perhaps the most influential American philosopher in Taiwan, said exactly what I was saying about this need to constantly renew democracy. This is something we've forgotten. Yeah. And that's why ultimately democracy is failing. And you can talk about social media, you can talk about this and that, and that's all true. But it's true because we've defaulted on the responsibility to remake democracy, to adapt to what we are capable of. And we've let everything else run ahead and democracy lag behind. And so, of course, it's dying.
其实现在有非常多的具有破坏式创新的工具出现，科技它是可以改变人跟人彼此互动方式的东西。举个例子来说，在广播出现的时候，其实很多本来没有办法和彼此互动或是接收到的资讯，都因为这个技术而被那个桥梁搭建了起来。人和科技是彼此连接在一起的，和科技连接的人们必须要一起去治理这样子的技术。我们的民主之所以现在正在走向某种程度的灭亡，是因为随着新科技的发展，我们并没有和民主一起演进，而我们的民主也并没有进行到更新。在传统的过去的管辖范围里面，我们并没有把这个新的科技发展的内容囊括进到我们民主的范畴里面。这其实并不是一个很激进的说法。在美国华盛顿特区的 Jefferson Memorial 这个地方，它上面就写到说，每30年宪法其实就必须要更新一次。那如果没有更新的话，会导致民主的败坏。而非常有名的这个，他有可能是台湾里面最重要的政治哲学家约翰杜威，他也特别讲到，民主是一个需要被不断更新的事情，但我们在过去这段时间却忘记了这件事情。那其他所有的发展都被摆到民主前面，那民主势必是会被留在后面，甚至导致可能的灭亡。
Yeah, 民主的制度要一直更新，否则可能会遇到一些我们大家不想看到却出现的结果。在Radical Markets 这本书里，我一直印象很深刻，有提到萨卡都哈，就是美国有一个例子是有川普第一次当选的那一次的选举。那在书里我记得也有提到台湾作为一个例子，是2000年的时候台湾的总统选举，也是所谓的三方选举人。那好像导致了这个结果，其实大家很意外，但是在投票的制度或者是从经济学家的眼中，觉得这个其实是可能是民主制度没有更新所带来的结果。是不是有一些什么样的具体的案例是在你的心里是会想要跟我们分享的？它也许证明了民主的好处，它也许也证明了民主需要被更新的迫切性。
So this thing can go two different ways. One possibility in the first past the post system that the US and Taiwan share, more or less, is that there's just two parties. And when there's just two parties, you can end up in a circumstance where everybody hates both of the candidates, and yet you vote for one to keep the other one out. That's what happened with Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton in 2016. And of about 20 candidates that ran in the primaries, they were like the most net unpopular of the candidates. And yet, because of these logics, they ended up winning. So that's one outcome. And another outcome that you're seeing this year in Taiwan is that you end up with more candidates, but then the person who's elected is not necessarily the person who, you know, if they'd been running against the other one, would have won on their own. So neither of those is particularly a great outcome from the perspective of how we think about democracy, and neither does a great job of encouraging genuine diversity, really interesting new candidates, new ideas to enter the space. Plurality is all about that. It's all about ways that we can find tools that simultaneously generate something that everyone can accept, but also encourage more novelty, more diversity. And there are voting rules that have been developed and that are being, you know, increasingly tested in the United States in local elections that avoid these problems. There's even more creative ones, like in radical markets, that do even more cool things. And hopefully any improvements are just the first step. But two really interesting ones are ranked choice voting and approval voting. So in ranked choice voting, there's many variations, but let me give you one. People rank the candidates that they want. And then if you can find a candidate who, if you put that candidate against every other candidate, they would beat them with a majority, that would be the candidate who wins. If I had to guess in this election, it would probably be Ke, would probably win in that type of a thing, but I don't know. Who knows? Mm-hmm. Another version like this is approval voting. So in approval voting, it's just the same as normal one, except you can vote for as many people as you want. And whoever gets the most votes wins. Mm-hmm. And then you don't need to worry about spoiling one with the other. So that both of these rules, on the one hand, allow for a candidate to be elected who has more consensus around them. And on the other hand, they make it much safer for more parties to exist, because more parties coming into existence doesn't undermine the existing parties. It doesn't lead to a fractured or strange outcome. It just adds more choices for the voters. Now, quadratic voting, which is a more advanced technique that we could talk about, has even cooler properties like this. But even these would be a huge advance and have been a huge advance in places like Maine and New York City that have tried them.
我们过去的民主政体里面通常都是有两个政党，台湾跟美国都是如此。那现在我们发现的问题就是，大家其实都只是试着要投给一个比较没有那么不喜欢的，然后来让另外一个可能比较喜欢一点点的人选上。那以美国的大选来说，二十个参加初选的人，就最后被选上的却是大家其实真的都不太喜欢的人。那这就是我们现在民主制度产生的一个问题。那今年以台湾来说的话，其实有好几个候选人比过去都还要多一些。那被选上的人可能也不会是整个社会多数人都特别喜欢或者是共同支持的。但是这样子很多的选举的候选人，其实也是促进了整个民主社会的多元性。在多元宇宙里面，我们希望的就是可以透过科技工具来帮助达成这样子的多元性。那我们其实可以看到，在美国或者是不同的在地的选举里面，已经有出现了一些蛮酷的方式。第一个可能是排名选择的制度 rank choice。 那这个方式呢，其实是你把你的支持的候选人排名出来，然后大家去综合评比出大家可能相对喜欢或者是更有共识的候选人。那另外一个有出现的叫做 approval voting， 是它的概念其实是你可以投给好很多个人，然后你投票的人数没有上限。那这两个投票方式呢，其实都是确保大家可以取得更多共识，那也有更多政党可以参与在整个民主的环境里面，那所有的选举人也可以有更多的选择。那其实我们还有更进阶的工具，像是平方投票法，那我们之后可能可以再讲到这些。但这边想要讲到就是，其实是有机会创造出这些不一样的技术来帮助大家去做选择的。
呀、yeah, ，其实我想刚刚的讲到这个投票的历史哈，在台湾，如果你经历过2000年或听过这个故事，你可能比较容易理解，就是大家可能会因为了讨厌特定的某个人，为了不要让他上，所以去投一个自己也许也没那么喜欢，但是他可以让那个讨厌的人不会上的这个选择，最后投票出来的结果会变成那一个当选者并不是社会每一个人或大众的最不反对的那一位候选人当选。这个制度其实很可能 在非常多的学术的研究里都发现了可能会有这样的缺漏。那所以我在看到Glenn Wild 的书在讨论这个问题，加上我自己作为台湾人经历过这样的一个故事，包含我们现在2024年的选举可能也会出现类似的结果，我会非常非常的有感觉。那也是我为什么这么喜欢 Glenn Wild 的各种论述跟相关的书籍。那我们回到台湾，就是我也关注到像这个 Vitalik 也经常来到台湾，然后这个 Glenn Wild 作为我非常喜欢的一本民主讨论的书籍的作者也亲临台湾。那在书里面也提到像 V 台湾这样的案例，或者2000年的台湾总统选举，能不能告诉我们在你的心里为什么台湾如此重要？台湾 是重要的吗？但是也许这是真的，那台湾为什么如此的重要？
Democracy is very static in much of the world. People, there's a certain number of systems, but they don't really change. And most places, technology has created a large number of social pathologies. There are problems of inequality and job displacement for working class people. There are problems of misinformation. There are problems of, you know, polarization and extremism. And what is remarkable about the Taiwan example is that Taiwan is arguably the society in the world that is most tech intensive. You know, technology industry's bigger share of GDP here, et cetera. And yet none of those things has been happening. In fact, they've been getting better using technology. Taiwan, the labor share of income has actually been rising. The Gini has actually been falling in the last decade. The pandemic, partly harnessing technology, was most effectively dealt with here. The tools have been that have in many places been polarizing people have actually been used to find productive solutions to public policy issues, whether by deliberation through V Taiwan or through hackathons and, you know, hacking the government and GovZero and so forth. These examples only touch a relatively small part of Taiwanese society, but you don't need to touch that much in order to get a huge improvement in the civic outcomes, especially when there is more than anywhere else in the world infusion relative to the population of mis and disinformation. And yet the society has had this amazing outcome. So that is a message of hope for so many places around the world. And we need examples like this. Furthermore, there are a number of features of the Taiwanese case that just make it a wonderful story. The story of Audrey as a transgender minister, the story of dealing with authoritarianism and the way that that speaks to people in the United States and in Europe across political divides that usually stop conversations about progress. So it's just a very compelling story for people and a very wonderful illustration of what's possible.
在很多的国家里面，其实民主是非常静态的。尽管我们有很多不同的制度，但这些制度都没有被改变。那这些没有被改变的制度，它造成了不平等、跟极化，还有各种不同的社会问题。台湾其实是全世界里面算是技术蛮先进的一个国家。过去的几十年来，我们看到劳工的情况越来越好。那在疫情的过程之中，也证明了其他很多国家的状况之下被用来危害民主或者是社会的科技工具，在台湾却变成了辅助民主社会跟公民社会里面一起变得更好的东西。像是 G0V 这样子的团体，或者是刚刚提到的 V 台湾，这些都是很好的案例。那在台湾不实资讯的处理也一直有被碰触到。那其实这些不同的案例都为各个不同地方的民主政体带来很多的希望。那在另外一点来说的话，台湾这边唐凤是首位跨性别的部长。 这本身就是一件非常激励人心的事情。那同时台湾又有很多对抗威权主义各种不同威权的故事，还有正在进行中的叙事。对美国来说，其实大家已经停止讨论任何的进展很久了，所以回头过来看到台湾这些不断往前进不断奋力抗战的这些精神，其实是非常吸引人的。
Yeah, 其实我也非常感动啊，就是台湾在这段时间也走得很远，但是我想最后也会好奇，就是说台湾其实感觉在各个领域都是有点两极化的发展，在民主也是这样的，我们有非常先进的 G0V, 我们有非常科技的数位部长，但是我们也有相对很原始的投票方式，时间非常的短，不到一天的时间，然后每个人必须拿着选票走到实体的地方来投票。前几天我跟 Glenn Wild 的朋友这个 Microsoft 的 researcher Madeline 碰面，他问我说如果有一个魔杖一挥就可以让台湾的社会跟民主变得更好，我会想要许什么愿望。那我会想到的是希望人们可以能够愿意主动的愿意花更多的时间去了解事实的真相，然后去建立自己的主观意识跟判断。那这对我来讲是一个很困难的事，我觉得大众也不一定那么容易做到。我问 Madeline 她怎么说，她笑了一下，她说她想要跟我分享在她自己出生的国家他们的投票制度是用可以用邮寄的方式，只要把信填一填寄回去，你就完成了一个投票。大家随时各种生活中的大小事都可以透过这个公民投票来决定，大致这个国家的政策，小至这个牧场牛只要如何管理。他觉得这个过程其实有效的帮助了这个 citizen 去 shaping 他们自己的主观意识。那另外我昨天也遇到一位 AI 艺术家Tom White, 他是住在纽西兰。那他告诉我说在纽西兰的投票是一个礼拜，每个人可以用一个礼拜的时间，只要在这个礼拜内去投票就可以了。那反观台湾，我们有非常棒的这个数位民主的实验性的平台跟 community, 但是我们好像有一些部分是落后的。你会觉得在台湾接下来我们要如何把我们的独特的地位我们的 feature 劣势跟我们的特性都可以转化为这个全球民主典范的这样的一个优势，这是我今天的最后一个问题。
One of my favorite phrases from my friend Jaron Lanier, who's the inventor of virtual reality, is that to say something is perfect is to be is the same as to say that it's hopeless. Because if something is perfect, you can't get any better. But if something is broken, that's where the light gets in, right? And so, yes, there are many, many, many places to go. And we can talk about many of these. In the book that's coming with Audrey talks about many of these. We talked about ranked choice and so forth. That's a really interesting area. Electronic voting, another really interesting area. And that's something New Zealand has done great things with. Another example is Taiwan has very interesting Aboriginal seats in the legislature and different principles for different people to be elected. You're on the at-large list. Others are in single-member district. But there's many other possibilities that could exist there. Some countries have seats for religions and, seats for different divides within the society. Many, many things to explore there. There are, there's this idea of liquid democracy where, authority can flow in different ways and not just one time with an election. There are continuous mandates that could decay over time. There are, rather than, you get a mandate every 4 years and then it's renewed every 4 years and people vote once every 4 years, they could vote whenever they feel the need to express something or change something. And that could gradually shift power rather than abruptly. There is all kinds of participation between elections, and Moda has been working on things like this, like quadratic funding and quadratic voting to direct public attention and resources. So we're just at the beginning. You know, the Apple One was a clunky box that almost no one wanted to use, but it inspired a lot. And that's maybe Taiwan's democracy. It's the Apple One of digital democracy. It opens our eyes that something better is possible. It gets us started and gives us hope, but it's not completed. It's just, you know, putting feet down the road. John Kennedy once said, this work will not be completed in the first 100 days, nor the first 1,000 days, nor the life of this administration, nor our time here on Earth, but let us begin. And hopefully today, together, in partnership, we can begin.
我的一个朋友，他是 VR 的发明人，他有说到一句非常发人深省的话，是如果说每件事情都是完美的，那就是没有希望，因为只有不完美的时候，才会有光可以透进去的地方。尽管台湾的民主制度不完美，很多这些光可以透进去的地方，其实是我们在书里面即将会探讨到的。那以台湾来说，其实也有非常多有趣的概念，比如说像原住民的席次，或者是像无任所，或者是政党席次，这样子的东西都是很有趣的机制。那在其他国家里面，其实也有像宗教或者是不同意见的人的席次的保留，这边有很多东西可以探索。有一个概念叫做流动式的民主，它是希望促进权力是可以被流动的。我们不是每几年投一次票，而是感觉到有需要的时候就去投票，就让大家去做决策，让决策的东西变得更跟着我们的需求走。台湾的数位部现在其实也开始做蛮多有趣的事情，包含平方投票法、平方募资法等等的实验。那这些其实都只是开始而已。我们回来看看iPhone 一第一代最开始被发明出来的时候，它其实就是一个重重的盒子。那也许台湾的民主现在就是在经历我们的 iPhone 第一代的时代。尽管它是一个很重的盒子，但是看着这个盒子，我们就可以感觉到未来的希望是可以寄托在这个上面的。我很喜欢的一句话是美国前总统约翰甘乃迪总统，他讲到的是，也许这些改变并不会在100天内，甚至1000天，甚至这个任期，甚至我们这整个人生之内被发生，但是只要我们开始，它就有机会。
真的非常感动啊！那我想，不管台湾的民主到底是第一代的 iPhone 还是第一代的苹果电脑，我觉得台湾能够投身作为一个非常棒的地方，然后也是华人世界的民主的先驱之地啊，我们能够投身在下一个世代的民主的改革或者革新上面，我觉得也非常荣幸了。那就像我说的，台湾其实对于新的，虽然我们有些东西很旧，需要被改变，但是我们对于很多新的事物，我们也是很投入的。像我自己的 podcast， 前面的10集里面至少一半都在讨论 radical markets， 那当时大家还听不太懂，那现在4年过去了，大家应该也开始逐渐感受到，民主是可以被讨论、可以被革新的。我想很多事物，当它在第一个阶段被普及的时候，人们会习以为常，觉得它就是这样而已。就像金钱，钱的概念在过去我们认为就是这样，就是钞票，就是政府发行的。但是到了 crypto 的时代，有了 blockchain， 我们看见了钱的新的可能性，它可以被分散，它可以被用共识的方式被架构起来。那我想民主也是，民主在过去我们认为就是那样而已。但是我想听了我们的节目，或者看了这个 Glenn Wild 的书籍，或者 Glenn Wild 即将跟唐凤还有一群人一起共同合写的 Plurality 的书，还有各种概念，我相信大家也可以完整的理解到，民主也许不只是那样而已，还有更多可能的样貌。You want to add something?
No, this is wonderful. Thank you so much for having me, and really looking forward to turning words into deeds and to turning a meeting into a growing friendship, bringing in more and more collaborators from around the world. So,
yeah, looking forward to seeing you more frequently in my podcast. Yeah, and also looking forward to see Vivian more frequently. Okay, yeah, 感谢大家收听今天的宝博朋友说，我是葛如君宝博士。如果你喜欢我的节目，欢迎点选订阅，下一集就会自动送上给你哦。不论你是在 Apple Podcast、Spotify 上、YouTube 或者其他平台听到我们的节目，欢迎给我们五星评价，按喜欢留言或大家小铃铛追踪订阅，也欢迎为这一集留下特别的鼓励哈。我们的企划剪辑都非常辛苦啊，为大家带来这一集这个 bilingual 啊，这个 hybrid 啊，这种录制的格式。那也希望大家会喜欢，我们下次空见喽，拜拜。